Log Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar, Log Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio. Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, coming to you live from the city of Detroit, Motown. Just because Barry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Tonight's program will not be the typical. I will not be specifically speaking and sharing about the coronavirus. I will not be speaking about and sharing information with respect to the new discoveries in the world of physics, astrophysics, space sciences, biology, chemistry, physiology, or what have you. I had initially put together an extensive program based on the current science of need today, which is respect to the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. But as I said last week, which was a difficult show for me to do, and the week before, my heart aches. My mind is in turmoil. It is difficult for me to settle down. I don't sleep much. And I'm not eating very well. These are my keys to let me know that I am emotionally distraught. My loved one, my love, my baby is in pain. She is in terror. She is in horror. She is in hell. So, I decided to deal with that issue in particular. And I'm going to deal with it this way. Defeating our demons is real. Coming to terms with who you are, where you are, why you are, and most importantly, loving yourself, forgiving yourself, never denying yourself whom you love, but more importantly, understanding why you love the way you love. Mental health is essential to establishing a balanced spiritual health. And becoming physically healthy is the key to maintaining a true natural order in yourself and the quality of your life. So, I want to deal with, and I'm speaking from the heart now, so I make it very scientific because that's my fallback language when I'm speaking straight from my heart. A science of the mind is a goal which has engrossed thousands of generations of men. Armies have fought over it. Dynasties have risen and fell because of it. And whole civilizations have perished for the lack of it. Mighty Rome went to dust for the want of it. China now swims in the blood for the need of it. And down in the arsenal is an atom bomb. Its hopeful nose full armed in ignorance of it. A science of the mind. No quest has been more relentlessly pursued or has been more violent. No primitive tribe, no matter how ignorant, has failed to recognize the problem as a problem. Nor has it failed to bring forth at least an attempted formulation. Today we find the Aborigine of Australia substituting for a science of the mind a magical healing crystal. The shaman of British Guiana makes shifts for actual mental laws with his monotonous song and consecrated cigar smoke. The throbbing drum of the Goldie Medicine Man serves in the stead of an adequate technique to alleviate the lack of senility in patients. A science of the mind. From the most ancient times to present, in the crudest primitive tribe, or the most magnificently ornamented civilization, man has found himself in a state of awed helplessness when confronted by the phenomena of the strange illnesses or aberrations that attack the mind. This desperation in his efforts to treat the individual has been but slightly altered during his entire history. And it has not been until the 20th century man passed the midterm. The percentages of his alleviations in terms of individual mental derangements compared evenly with the success of the shamans confronted in the same problem. According to a so-called modern writer, the single advance of psychotherapy was clean places for the madman. In terms of brutality in treatment of the insane, the methods of the shaman or bedlam have been far exceeded by the civilized techniques of destroying nerve tissues with the violence of shock and surgery or extreme pharmaceutical drugs. In the larger sphere of society and nations, the lack of such a science of mind was never more evident. For the physical sciences advancing thoughtless and far advanced of man's ability to understand man. These problems, our problems, are not mild ones. They lie across every man and woman's path. They await in company with our future. As long as man and woman has recognized this His chief superiority over the animal kingdom was the ability to think, so long as we understood that this mind alone was our weapon. Like a jigsaw puzzle spilled by a careless hand, the equations which would lead us to a science of the mind and above that to a master science of the universe were stirred round and round. Sometimes two fragments would be united. Sometimes, as in the case of the so-called Golden Age of Greece, a whole section could be built. Philosophers, shamans, medicine men, mathematicians, each looked at the pieces. Some saw they must all belong to different puzzles. Some said there were really six puzzles in it. Some said two. And wars went on and on and on, and societies got sicker and more sickened or were dispersed. And so-called burned tomes were written about ever-increasing hordes of madmen. So what must a science of the mind look like? What must it be composed of? One, an answer to the goal of thought. Two, a single source of all insanities, psychoses, neuroses, compulsions, repressions, and social derangements. Three, invariant scientific evidence as to the basic nature and functional background of the human mind. Four, techniques by which the discovered single source could be invariably cured, ruling out, of course, the insanities of the malformed, deleted, or the pathologically injured brain or nervous system, particularly the iatrogenic psychoses, or those things caused by doctors involving the destruction of living brain tissue due to an outside force, or again, extreme pharmaceutical drug use. Such a science of the mind would exceed the severest terms previously laid down for it in any age, by any computation on the subject, should be discovered that a science of the mind ought to be able to be and do just these things: solve problems. So what is the goal of man in these instances? What is the lowest common denominator of all of man and woman's activities? It can be distilled down to what can be called the dynamic principles of our existence. Should an answer be discovered, it is inevitable that from it many answers would, and should flow. It will explain all phenomena of our behavior. It would lead towards solutions of man's major problems. And most of all, it would be very workable. If we consider all knowledge to fall above or below a line of demarcation, everything above this line is not necessary to the solution of man's aberrations and general shortcomings and is inexactly known. Such a field of thought could be considered to embrace such things as metaphysics and mysticism. Below this line of demarcation could be considered to lie the finite universe. All things in the finite universe, whether known or as yet unknown, can be sensed, experienced, or measured. The known data in the finite universe can be classified as scientific truth when it has been sensed, experienced, and measured. All factors necessary to the resolution of science of the mind can be and are found within the finite universe, and were discovered, sensed, measured, and experienced, and became scientific truth. The finite universe of which I describe to you right now contains time, space, energy, and life. And it is for your life, my love, that I fight right now. No other factors were found necessary in the equation. Time, space, energy, and life have a single denominator in common. An analogy, or as an analogy, it could be considered that time, space, energy, and life began at the same point of origin and were commanded to continue to some nearly infinite destination. They were told nothing but what to do. They obey a single order, and that order is to survive. So what is the dynamic principle of our existence? The dynamic principle of our existence is survival. The goal of life can be considered to be infinite survival. Man and woman as a life form can be demonstrated to obey in all of this action and purposes the one command, survive. It's not a new thought that man is surviving. It is a new thought that man is motivated only by survival. We see it in the world today. Black lives matter. Your life matters. My life matters. Survive. As a life form, we all obey this command to survive. This single goal is survival does not mean that this is the optimal survival mechanism which life has attained or will develop. The goal of the dinosaurs was also to survive, if you believe in such things. But they didn't. Obedience to this command, survive, does not mean that every attempt to obey is uniformly successful. Changing environments, mutations, and many other things militate against any one organism attaining invaluable survival techniques or form. Life forms change and die as new life forms develop, just as surely as one life organisms. Lacking immortality in itself creates other life organisms, then dies as itself. An excellent method should one wish to cause life to survive over a long period would be to establish means by which it could assume any form. And death itself would be necessary in order to facilitate the survival of the life force itself, since only death and decay could clear away older forms when new changes in the environment necessitate new forms of life. Life, as a force existing over a nearly infinite period, would need a cyclic aspect in its unit organism and form. So what would be the optimum survival characteristic of various life forms? They would have to have various fundamental characteristics, differing from one species to the next, just as one environment differs from the next. So what is the ultimate necessity of life is to survive, but not just to exist, but to survive well. You cannot quit on this life. You must fight for it to possess it. You must fight for it to survive well. Difficulty is ordained to force us to fight for the life of survival that we have. So for a moment, I want to leave these scientific things, such as cells and terminologies and all this other stuff. And I want to consider some further aspects of the problem of understanding the human mind. The demons, our demons. People have been working on problems related to our behavior, man's behavior, for a good many millennia. Hindus, Egyptians, Greeks, Romans, and our own philosophers and researchers for the past few thousand years have been struggling against a superabundance of complexity. Psychoanalysis of mentality could be evolved only by the philosophic compartmentation of the problem into elements and the invention of several dozen different yardsticks, such as the introduction of an arbitrary, or I should say an arbitrary, the law of affinity, the dynamics of existence, the equation of the optimum solution, and the laws of selection of importance, the science of organizing sciences, nullification by comparison of authority to authority, and so forth and so on. All this is fine matter for a tome on philosophy. But here is the psychoanalysis of the love principles of therapy for the mind, which is a science. It should be mentioned, however, that one of the first steps taken was not invented, but borrowed and modified. That was the concept of the knowable and the unknowable of Herb Extension. Absolutism is a fine road to stagnation. And I don't think Mr. Stenson meant to be so entirely absolute about his knowable and unknowable. Survive is the demarcation point between those things which can be experienced by the senses and those things which cannot be necessarily known through the senses, but which possibly may be known, but which one does not necessarily need to solve a problem. Among those things which one did not necessarily need to know were the realms of mysticism and metaphysics. Many things in the evolution of the psychoanalysis therapy of love of the mind were bypassed solely because they had not yielded solutions to anyone else. Therefore, mysticism got the short shrift, despite the fact that many writers studied it, not in the little understood secondhand cults, but in Asia, where a mystic can make his astral self get out and run errands for him in a strictly a second-rate character. This is not the movies. I am well aware that there are pieces in this jigsaw puzzle which were orange with yellow spots and purple with carmine stripes. One found it necessary to pick up only those pieces which are germane. Someday, a large number of pieces about the structure with the rest will come in, and there will be answers to telepathy, prescience, and so on and so on. Got to understand that there are a lot of pieces in the construction of a philosophic universe, but none of the mystic pieces were found necessary to the creation of a uniformly applicable and aberration-resolving science of the mind. Imagine the consternation one must have felt when demons of the mind and body were discovered. Socrates had a demon. And if you understand and remember the history of Socrates, you'll remember Socrates' demons told him not what to do. This demon said whether or not he had the right decisions. Had he, or here, oh, excuse me, here we have been pursuing a course in the finite universe, which would have pleased Hume, for those of you who are into psychotherapy, for his tenacity to those things which could be sensed, and up popped demons. A thorough examination of a number of subjects, 14 in particular, revealed that everyone apparently has or had a demon of some sort in their heart, mind, and spirit. They were randomly selected subjects in various conditions in society. Therefore, the demon aspects was most alarming. However, unlike some cults or schools, as they call themselves, the temptation to sail off into romantic, inexplicable, and confounding labels has been resisted by me. A bridge had to be built across a canyon, and demons are the darned, they are bad girders to build bridges out of. Out in the Pacific Islands, Borneo, the Philippines, many had gone to study and had seen quite a bit of demonology at work. Demonology is fascinating stuff. A demon gets into a person and makes them sick. It gets in and runs around and talks for you. Instead of your mind speaking, the demon in you is speaking. He or she goes crazy because the demon in him or her has run around shouting out to the world while you sit back as a spectator. That is demonology in a narrow sense. The shaman, the medicine man, these people deal pretty heavily in demonology. But while not skeptical particularly, it has always been and seemed to me that demons could be explained a little more easily than in terms of ectoplasm or some such unsensible material. To find demons living in one's civilized loved ones was disturbing and is disturbing. But there they were. At least there were the manifestations which the shamans and the medicine man said were caused by demons. It is found that these demons could be cataloged. There are commanding demons, critical demons, ordinary tell you what to do and say demons, and demons which stood around and yelled, or demons which simply occluded or blocked things and kept them out of your sight. These are not all the classes of things, of demons, but they, what I just described, covers the general field of the real demon in the real human mind and body and spirit. Many psychotherapists have experimented with drugs on subjects showed that it was possible to set these demons up at will. It was even possible to call forth the demon. So there was something really wrong with the definition defining what demonology truly is in the psychoanalytical, emotional, spiritual, truest form. Without proper ritual, simply by word of mouth, one can make new demons appear in people. It's called advertising, television, movies, the club, the devil made you be. Same sister or brother who went to the club on Friday night, Saturday night, sat in the pew on Sunday. A demon is a parasite, a parasitic circuit. It has an action in the mind which approximates another entity other than self. And it is derived entirely from words contained in engrams. Now, for those who do not know what an engram is, an engram is a unit of cognitive information inside the brain. It is believed to be the means by which memories are stored as biophysical or biochemical changes in the brain in response to an external stimulus. Our demons come with us when we are born. We are challenged to overcome our demons, to become one with the source of the life that we live and are given, God. How this demon gets there is not very hard to understand once you've inspected one close up to you. For example, Papa, while baby is unconscious, yells at mama that she's got to listen to him and nobody else, by God. That baby in vitro, that baby as a newborn, unable to respond and react, hears what is said, consciously and subconsciously. That baby gets an engram. It is keyed in sometime between babyhood and death. Keyed in meaning activated as a functioning entity inside that person. My love's demons have been keyed in by her environment. Her demons are a subculture which undergirds her mentality from birth and before birth, in vitro. An electronics engineer can set up demons in a radio circuit to his heart content. In human terms, it's as if one ran a line from the standard bank, that means your bank of memories, toward your analyzer, your cognitive brain. But before it got there, he put in a speaker and a microphone and then continued the line to your plane of your consciousness. Between the speaker and the microphone would be a section of your analyzer, your thinking brain, which was an ordinary working section, but compartmented off from the remainder of your analyzer, your cognition. I, on a conscious plane, wants data, information. It should come straight from your standard bank. Your standard bank is your memories, your thoughts, your ideas. Computed on a sub-level and arrive just as data. Not spoken data or information, just data, just information. But with the portion of your analyzer, your brain, compartmented off, and the speaker microphone installation and the engram containing the above words, got to listen to me by God, is in chronic restimulation, another thing happens in your brain. It becomes demonic. The eye in the upper level attention unit in your brain wants data. But here you start to scan your standard bank, your thoughts, with a sub-level. That information comes to you as spoken words, like a voice inside your head. a voice that speaks to you directions that are not your own thoughts or desires or wants or needs. It is a desire, a want, and a need that is pre-programmed in you, in vitro, and as a babe. As a baby, you are now programmed. Because all your brain is doing at that stage of life is recording information, setting up commands that are not your own thoughts. So this will come as a surprise to many of you. This is called the listen to me demon, which is to say that the engram in your brain, that unit of cognitive information in your brain, has stored biophysically or biochemically a change and controlled response to what you will or will not do. It talks to you when you are unable to talk to yourself. Stay right here. Stay right there. And listen to me. Sixes to do what I tell you, engram. After it has been keyed in by an external response or stimulus. Proving this, I found to be very easy. Without exception, it is a safe assumption that almost every aberree or aberrated person, someone who is housed within a facility for mental instability, are aberrated and are dealing with a demon circuit in their brain. So the type of engram which makes a critical demon is you are always criticizing me. You say you love me, but you call me a slut. You call me a whore. You call me some other negative and aberrated identity. You're programming me. But I lack the capacity to defend myself because I am a baby, a child. There are dozens of such statements contained in engrams, and any one which will make a critical demon, just as any combination of words, resulting in a demand to listen and obey orders will make a commanding demon control your thoughts and your actions without your knowledge, cognitively. All these demons are parasitic, are parasites. That is to say, they take a part of your analyzer, your mind, and compartment it off. So a demon, your demon, my demon, can think only as well as the person's mind can think. There is no extra power, no benefit. It's all loss. the devil is a liar. Accepting that and believing that gives you the ability to destroy your demons. It is possible to set up the whole computer, your analyzer, your mind, as a demon circuit and leave eyes on a tiny forlorn shelf somewhere. This on the surface is a pretty good stunt. It makes it possible for the whole analytical mind to work out computations undisturbed and relay the answers to the I, yourself. But in practice, it is very bad, for I is the will, the determining force of the organism, the awareness. And very soon, I becomes so dependent upon this circuit that the circuit begins to absorb you. This is where my baby is at now. Her circuit has absorbed her. And the circuit must be broken. For any such circuit to last, would have to have pain. And the pain must be chronic. When you have been told since you were a baby, a child, that you are all forms of derogatory language towards women, or all derogatory language about men, these things become chronic in your nature. Thus, your demon is a chronic demon. You are forever in a struggle and a fight, and there never seems to be any peace. And I say, seems to be any peace, because the devil is a liar, coming to comprehend and understand and take hold of that gives you the ability to break the chronic cycle, regardless of the language from others. Of all the engram demon circuits found and removed, those which contain a seemingly all-powerful exterior entity which will solve all problems and answer every want were the most dangerous. Therefore, you would have to be reductive of the intellect and would victimize the owner, the you, by eventually making you ill one way or another. Therefore, it is essential for your demons to cause you to become physically weak, to attack you and destroy you. For without the physical destruction, your body is strong, you have the ability to fight back, because it gives your mind an opportunity to rest and confront. As an engram is keyed in further and further, was constantly restimulated by external events, it will make a spineless puppet out of the eye in this case, you. Because even though we know that these demons exist, there are other engrams present in us that are not demonic, but just part of the everyday struggles of life. So, the sum of the reduction tended toward insanity of a serious sort. So if you want a sample, just imagine what you would have to say to a hypnotized person to make him or her think that he or she was in the hands of a powerful being who gave him or her orders. And then imagine this is the phrase spoken when an individual has been knocked unconscious one way or another. So, there's another full class of demons of which you must battle. The occlusion demons. The demons who shut things off. These are not properly demons because they don't talk. A bona fide demon is one who gives thoughts voices or echoes the spoken word interiorly, or who gives all sorts of complicated advice like a real live voice exteriorly. People who hear voices have exterior vocal demons. But these are circuits which have tied up their imagination circuits. The occlusion demon doesn't have anything to say. It is what he or she doesn't permit to be said or done that makes the mental derangement. An occlusion demon can exist for a single word. For example, a child receives an engram by falling off her bicycle and losing consciousness. A policeman tries to assist her. She is still unconscious, but moving and muttering that she can't move. The officer says cheerfully, "Never say can't." Sometime later, she has a conscious level experience, such as another fall, but without injury. Now she has difficulty saying the trouble. It is called mental anguish. Now she can't say can't, which is dangerous in any event, because there are things that you cannot do. What if she had that common engramic experience or expression, never say no? That means anything anybody says to you or asks of you, you say yes, even though it's not what you want to do. These things present themselves in sexual forms all the time. Oh, don't tell. It's been our secret. You're a child. So you keep the secret. You have a demon circuit in play on you now. Occlusion demons hide things from the eye, you. It is easy for one to mask many words. The individual having one will then omit these words or alter them or misspell them all the time and make mistakes with them. The demon is not the only reason words get altered. But the demon is a specific case. An occlusion demon can be of a much higher strength and breadth. The occlusion demon can be created with the phrase, don't talk. Don't tell anybody. It's our little secret. Or who said you could talk? Any of these phrases might produce a stammer, cause someone to stutter in their later life. So other things besides speech can be occluded. Any ability of the mind can be inhibited by a demon specifically designed to obstruct that ability. Not being able to say no and finding yourself in conditions where you are out of control and taking advantage of it. Any perception can be occluded in recall. And whatever it is occluded, or that I should say, whenever it is occluded in recall, it affects actual perception and the organs of perception as well. You can't see. May not reduce not only recall, but the actual organic ability of your eye, as in an astigmatism or myopia. One can imagine the entire English language, or in other lands with other languages, any language, susceptible to inclusion within engrams. Just how many abilities of the mind's operation can be occluded? An extremely common one is you can't think. So far now, you has been used in illustrations and examples in order to keep the similarity to a hypnotic or drug test. Actually, sentences which contain I are more destructive. I can't feel anything. I can't think. I can't remember. These and their thousands and thousands of variations, when spoken within the hearing of an unconscious person, are applicable to himself when he or she gets the engram keyed into a circuit, thus creating the demon in their life. You has several effects, or rather should say effects. The statement, you are no good, to an awake person makes the person feel very angry, perhaps when he has an engram to that effect. Within him, he feels possibly that people think he is no good. He may have a demon inside of him that tells him he is no good. Just as my baby has been keyed in with a demon that has told her that she is no good. It can be sprayed off by being dramatized. A person who has an engram to the effect that he or she is sexually sterile, for instance, will tell people that they are sexually sterile. Don't do as I do as I say. If he has an engram that says you are no good, you have to eat with your knife. You may eat with his knife, but he gets excited about people eating with their knives. And he would grow very angry if somebody said he ate with his knife. Thus, there are compulsion demons and confusion demons and so forth and so on. And your state of confusion has created a state of terror and panic in your environment. thus these demonic engrams have a command value in your life. There is a power of choice exercised in your reactive mind about which and what engrams will be used. But any engram strongly enough re-stimulated will come to the surface and be dramatized. Thus, you are overwhelmed by your demons, and they are bringing you pain and suffering and fear and terror and belief that you're going to die. The devil is a liar. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I'm not done. We'll be right back. I need to get a shot of water, clear my throat a little bit, and see what we can see to help things along a little bit. So we're going to hit the train whistle. And we're going to hear a little bit of, oh, let's see who we got here. Oh, boy. Sometimes picking a good piece of music can be quite difficult. But I don't want to bore you with anything. I want to keep you all excited. I want to keep you all engaged. I don't want to lose your ear. So, what to do? I think. Okay, here we go.
Doesn't it feel like this could be real life if we had something to prove? Life would be normal, getting formal. I could be happy with you. Primitive passion, human reaction. Never wondered what this could be. I just fuck you and leave. You never wanted nothing from me. I just fuck you and leave. We don't ever come to agree. I just fuck you and leave.
Wanted nothing. if I could deal with the pain.
But I can't
survive another tumble down lover's lane. The brightest color in an ocean of gray ain't the same if I can't. Ain't the same if you stay.
What we were doing wouldn't make it okay.
But how?
Would it be better when we're making a way? Don't want your heart if you can't take it away. It's a better affair when there's nothing to say. Yeah, yeah.
I never wondered what this would be.
Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science. It's your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. What is the purpose of all this tonight's show? The purpose, aside from it being dedicated and directed toward a specific individual, applies to everyone listening. We all have demons. But as long as we know and understand that the devil is a liar, these demons can be attacked, destroyed, removed, and life can go forward in a healthier framework. But there are keys to survival. The first key is to get the body strong. These demons had to make you physically weak in order to make you mentally and emotionally weak. They had to break you down. The overuse of medication, the improper intake of food, the inability to sleep, the mind became tired. As the mind became tired, the body became restless and unable to find pause. It is the pause that refreshes. You were never able to refresh, thus the body became broken down, thus the mind could be attacked because the mind was tired, because the body was weak. Ultimately, the spirit has been broken. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to continue with a little discussion on psychosomatic illness. I do not want it misinterpreted saying that, oh, people just saying I'm crazy, it's all in my head. Essentially it is, but a better understanding of the psychosomatic illness takes away the stigma of trying to say someone is crazy. Because psychosomatic illnesses are those things that have a mental origin. However, there is an organic cause. You are not crazy. It's not just in your head. There is an organic, a physical, biochemical, reactionary problem which allowed for the mind to constitute an inorganic problem mentally. Despite the fact that there existed no precise scientific proof, my opinion as to this existence has been strong and scientifically viable since the days of the Greeks and in recent times. Various drug preparations have been concocted and sold which were supposed to overcome these sicknesses. Some success was experienced, sufficient to warrant a great deal of work on the parts of the researchers, but more often than not, pharmaceutical companies come up with a drug, then create a sickness for the drug to be used for. Peptic ulcers, for instance, have yielded to persuasion and environmental changes. A drug called ACTH has had some astonishing but wildly unpredictable results. Allergies have been found to yield more or less to things which depress histamine in the body. About 70% of physicians' current roster of diseases fall into the category of psychosomatic illnesses. But I'm certain many more diseases or conditions are psychosomatic because they haven't been studied in the proper format yet. But I would venture to say that almost all illness are psychosomatic. Well, there exist, after all, life forms called germs. Not all illnesses are psychosomatic, but most are. It was the work of Dr. Louis Pasteur who formulated the germ theory of disease. However, most germs, the body would fight them off if the mind-body-spirit balance was maintained. The body's immune system would remove it before it made you sick. Give me a moment, listeners. We have a problem here, and I need to take a second to deal with that problem. Getting back to my train of thought, It was Dr. Louis Pasteur who formulated the germ theory of disease. However, the human body is a perfect machine. When all of its systems, mind, body, spirit, are in balance, when these things are in balance, the immune system will defeat any foreign germ that enters the body for the most part. 95% of all germs will be defeated by the immune system. It is the rare few that would make you sick that you would need additional help from a doctor or something to tend to. And let me share it with you this way. Everybody on the planet has AIDS. At one time or another. Are you shocked? Don't be. AIDS is an autoimmune disease. What is an autoimmune disease? An autoimmune disease is the common cold. An autoimmune disease is the flu. An autoimmune disease is the COVID-19 coronavirus. An autoimmune disease is SARS, MERS, the measles, the mumps, chickenpox. These are all autoimmune diseases. HIV is an autoimmune disease. Almost all germophobic or parasitic sicknesses are autoimmune diseases. Arthritis is an autoimmune disease. Bursitis is an autoimmune disease. Most nasal congestive problems are the result of an autoimmune condition where the immune system either overdoes it or doesn't do anything at all. For example, if your body is producing too much phlegm, your immune system is not that it's working. It's stuck in a gear. There's a gateway in the chemical response in the body that has allowed the doorway in that biochemical reaction to remain in the open position, and you're constantly producing phlegm for no reason, whether you got a cold. It doesn't matter what the reason anything is. You're producing phlegm, and the phlegm builds up, runs down your throat, gets into your stomach, gets into your boom boom, and you're pooping out big ball clots of phlegm because you're suffering from an autoimmune condition. So we all suffer from autoimmune diseases, syndrome, AIDS. You got allergies, you got AIDS. Can these things be corrected? Abso-frickin-lutely. Thus, most of these conditions are activated due to a psychosomatic or a mental stimulus, which then has its root issue in an organic problem. It does not mean you're crazy. And if anybody tells you, well, it's psychosomatic, it's in your head, say, yes, doc, but what do I do to correct the condition? Don't give me a goddamn Band-Aid. Give me a freaking cure, you son of a gun. Well, I got a cure, goddammit, and I'm going to make sure that those that I love have the cure to correct the psychosomatic condition and the triggers of the demons, which then bring the psychosomatic conditions to the forefront to create physical, organic problems. Not my people. To hell with that. I have the cure. Come home to me, and I will make sure that the cure is readily available, with testimonies from others who are taking the cure to render their problems mitigated. And mitigation simply means the complete reduction and management of an issue that is no longer debilitating to stop life. And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network, signing off with you tonight, that you may gestate on what I shared with you this evening as I took the time to study my lessons, to talk to people who know more about subject matter than me, so that I can have an answer for you, and you, and you, and especially my baby, for you. So I leave you, as I came before you, with the greeting words of peace and paradise. In the Arabic language, the original tongue of Arabic, Aramaic, and Hebrew, As-salamu alaykum, shalom alaykum, meaning peace be unto you, because ultimately I want you to be at peace with yourself and compassionate peace with me. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith.